Ow. Ow, ow, ow. I'm just looking at that photo at coasttocoastam.com of the guy who put a screwdriver in his own eye. Ow. Doctors in Poland removed a screwdriver from the head of a 25-year-old man. He was doing a DIY thing in his backyard, and he slipped, and he fell face first onto his screwdriver. Ow! The photo is up at coasttocoastam.com. You know, DIY is supposed to stand for do it yourself, not drive it into yourself. And this is, see, this would be like one of those times when your mother is right. She always said you could put an eye out. It's like running with scissors, you know. You gotta give mom her props on that. Coast to Coast AM, and this is Ian Punnett for my monthly visit here. And what a terrific show we have tonight. Looking forward to disaster government, national emergencies, continuity of government, or COG, as it's called. And you, this is the new book by Brian Toohey. Brian has been on with us before talking about The Fix Is In, which has been his ongoing examination of the relationship between the outcome of games, the motives of sports teams and leagues, the collusion of referees, all that in professional sports of every type. But this is his new book, Disaster Government, National Emergencies, Continuity of Government, and You. We'll get to that coming up next hour. We'll do some open lines coming up this hour. That's not the only great story at coasttocoastam.com, though. Go take a look at the Attack of the Clones, the story of the tooth replacement, which is coming after scientists learned how to grow teeth from mouse cells. You know, it sounds, I mean, it kind of, remember that image of the scientists that were growing an ear on a mouse's back? It's kind of like that, except now that, as if that mouse wasn't funny looking enough, now it's got big giant buck human teeth in front. So anyway, go take a look at that. We put that up at coasttocoastam.com, and there's a story too about this book that I have coming out at the end of April, and that was featured prominently from Lex. And thank you so much for doing that. So much to get to, though, on the show tonight. First, let me just say, if you know the numbers, call them now. We'll get to open lines coming up next, along with one warning about why you need to stay 100% healthy. Coming up next on Coast to Coast AM, this is Ian Punnett. All right, so if you go to coasttocoastam.com, cool story about Beyond Belief 2, the George Nori online show. Don't miss that if you haven't seen it yet. And a very attractive woman that he's doing the show with currently. You go find out more at the website, where you'll also find out that there's a kind of a cool thing. This book that I have coming up, which you can find out more about by going to howtopraybook.com, has been chosen by Publishers Weekly to be in the top 10 spring releases in the religion section of bookstores. And that's kind of cool. But the cool part was, too, that they said that the title of the book, which I will not be saying on the air out of deference to George, but you can see it at howtopraybook.com, the book, the title was chosen as the runaway best title of the season from Publishers Weekly, which is totally cool, too. And they're going to do a feature on that coming up. I'll feature you in just a minute. We'll answer some of these open lines that are ringing. If you know the numbers, call them now. If not, get them on the website. But look, you know, when I told you that story about the guy who fell and the screwdriver went in his eye and stuff, and he survived, but they had to take it out at a hospital. And there is a frequency of stories popping up, which you've been hearing about for years on Coast to Coast, which just gets more serious with seemingly with every investigation, with every university hospital research project. And that's the story of superbugs. The story that's out from over the weekend is that these superbugs, this new wave of superbugs, is so deadly that it kills about 50% of the patients with which it comes in contact. That's 50%. And that these superbugs are lurking in hospitals. Hospitals are trying to be as diligent as they can about eliminating these. But once they get into your system, once they get make contact with, say, your bloodstream, you're toss a coin, heads or tails. You might make it, you might not. It's an antibiotic resistant bacteria, which could be the next, it could be the next global pandemic. That may be redundant. I can't remember if that's redundant or not, but you know what I mean. It's such a scary prospect because all it takes is one, obviously, microscopic bit to get through whatever net, whatever force field that a hospital's epidemiology department is throwing up, around patients trying to keep them healthy. And that's all it just takes is just that one, just little bit. And it can just create a whole new, havoc all over again. So just keep that in mind. They were just reading a story over the weekend about 5,000 patients die each year in the UK from what they call gram-negative sepsis, where the bacterium gets into the bloodstream. Half of the cases, the bacterium is resistant to drugs. The other half, it's not, it can still, drugs can have an effect, but patients can still die eventually. So stay healthy. Do your best to stay out of hospitals. And let's stay on the phones for the rest of this hour. We'll go to Dan, first time caller line, Elwood, Indiana, on Coast to Coast AM. Dan?
Hey, Ian. Thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it.
Good. Where are you going to take us?
I want to talk about the, is there any original ideas coming out of Hollywood? Tonight I was watching a show on ABC called, Revenge. Then there was a show on after called Red Widow, and it's virtually Revenge. The characters.
Yeah.
Red Widow is actually pretty bad because you could tell they were driving in front of a green screen.
Yeah.
I mean, there's some good remakes. I mean, I thought Battlestar Galactica, the new one, was actually one of my favorite shows of all time.
What, the movie? Oh, no. Oh, you're talking about the BBC version. I see it pops up on Sci-Fi Channel. I've watched it a little bit, the remake. Yeah, that was okay.
Yeah, and I like Caprica, too. To me, it was just Battlestar Galactica. I gave the backstory, and then they just recently did Blood and Chrome. Remakes and...
Let's keep this in mind. At one point, remember, CBS had... The Beverly Hillbillies, Green Acres, and Petticoat Junction, right?
Yeah, they were good for their time.
Okay, but they were all basic variations on a theme back then, too. And, then there was, I Dream of Jeannie and Bewitched and, fill in a half of my favorite, Martian. Hollywood isn't known for coming up with the most creative solutions to programming problems. Whatever is working, trying to find a way to make another one just like it. Look at all the Law and Order versions that were abounding there for a while.
Some of those are good, some of those are bad, but...
Yeah, well, your point's taken, though, and I appreciate that. I was kind of looking forward to Red Widow, though. Let's get to Les in Fairlawn, New Jersey, east of the Rockies on Coast to Coast. Les?
Hello, Ian.
Hey,
I found out something recently about the telephone system, which I think might be a cause for concern.
Tell me about that.
I found out that if you have a fiber optic telephone line... The phone is likely to fail sooner if there's a power failure or a surge than it would with the copper wire, because the fiber optic does not have any electricity going through it. But you still need electricity to get it from the point where the wire comes to your house to your telephone. So they plug it into the electricity, the 110, in your house, and then the transformer to take it down to low voltage. But the point is, if there's a power failure or a surge, then the only thing that will keep the phone working is there's an emergency battery. They say it'll work for 8 hours, and then they say the phone will fail. Now, if you have the copper wire, even if there's a power failure, usually the phone stays on a lot longer than that. So, in other words, it could be a serious problem. If there's a storm, a power failure, the last thing you want is for your phone to go out also. And
you I know, just, uh, That's a fair point. I don't even have a hardwired phone anymore.
Well, you might want to have an expert on your program to talk about this, because I think there's probably millions of people out there who have fiber optic, and they don't know that it will probably fail sooner if there's a power failure than the copper wire. I had the fiber optic for a little while, but once I found out about this, I asked them to take out the fiber optic and put in the copper wire again. It's kind of the opposite of what most people do, but in any case, that's what I did. But there's still probably lots of people out there who don't know about it. So I hope you'll find someone to talk about it on your
podcast. I don't know who we could find that could possibly be better or more succinct than you. I think you nailed it. I think it's an interesting, I never thought about it, and I hope that the people that are concerned about that look into it, and I appreciate that. Let me get to Anthony in Las Vegas, but I'll say I'm one of those people who, I mean, I gave up on a hardwire phone about 3 months ago, and so far, I just haven't missed it. We're just all cellular in our house. Anthony in Las Vegas on Coast to Coast. Open lines, Anthony.
Hey, Ian. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, go for it.
I wanted to talk about government preparedness and what I see as the end point of what we're getting to is constantly selling us on fear, a fear of lone shooters, a fear of Al-Qaeda, ultimately just to tax us more and give up more of our civil liberties, our rights to the government to in order for them to protect us. And what I think is a guise to take away our rights and to live in a state of fear, which none of us really should.
Where do you think this started happening?
I think that it's just human nature for people to be at the, I guess you could say, people in media or anyone who can stand on the pulpit, stand on the soapbox, to some of them that naturally generate fear. And that they build off of creating a divide, of creating fear, and of everybody looking towards them because they're in a scared state.
I totally get that. But when do you think this started happening?
Well, what are you speaking generally about terrorism? And that's
no, about the idea of government using fear and manipulating executive orders or, using the law to try to keep people in line.
Well, I think ultimately it's been a big part of government since the very beginning, but I think generally now I think it started when it comes to 9/11 and a great everybody generating fear about being caught up in a terrorist attack and, the old lady walking out of Joanne's Fabric and being afraid of Osama bin Laden could attack her because he walked out of CSI,
No, I think that's a fair point. I guess what was really interesting, and I think what you'll enjoy coming up next hour, is when you hear Brian Toohey do the survey that he came up with historically, how far back these abuses have gone of using national emergencies to satisfy a short-term political or governmental need. And it's really well documented, and it cuts across all parties and all presidencies. It's really interesting. And I had not been aware of how long that very tactic that you're referring to, how long that had been used. I mean, it's pretty fascinating, including one of the most egregious practitioners of that was Abraham Lincoln. And especially in the idea of manipulating through fear. But thank you, Anthony. I appreciate it. And I think it's a fair point. I think you're going to really enjoy next hour, disaster government, national emergencies, continuity of government, and you. Dan is in Huntington Beach. Hey, Dan.
Thank you, Ian.
Hey, go ahead.
Yeah, we always complain about the government. But I want to argue why we get the government we deserve.
Yeah, well, that's true, too. Go ahead.
Remember the Wizard of Oz, the Cowardly Lion, the Scarecrow, and the Tin Man petitioning the wizard for courage, brains, and a heart?
Yeah.
Well, that's the analogy I like to liken our situations to. That movie, I think, was about our relationship with our government. We don't have the courage, the heart, or the brains to stand up for ourselves and to stand up to the powers that be. The wizard is like the media, and we have let the mind control machinery of the CIA, the media, pervert us to an animal that's Soviet class versus what used to be a prouder American class of people. For example, do any of your listeners remember a trial for Mark David Chapman? Of course not. We're mind controlled.
Well, I think we all remember the trial, or we at least remember the prosecution, the case that they had against him. What do you mean? Well, I know there's no trial. I just said, at least the case.
Wait.
It's not what I just said. I corrected myself. I said, at least the case they were building against him. So, yeah, I mean, I think we all know that. Are you one of those people that are doing the whole Stephen King killed John Lennon thing?
Everybody in Bangor, Maine knows it's true.
Okay, that's not you again. Okay, this would be the note that we were making beforehand about not letting the usual suspects abuse the privilege of being on the air. So, Jason, note, Dan from Huntington Beach, put him on the list, if you would, please, of the guys who just have to say the same things. God bless you. I know it's a kind of an OCD thing or something that you have to keep saying it over and over again, but I think we can move on. Let's go to Jose, though, in California for, I hope, a new direction for Open Lines. Jose?
Yes. Thank you for taking my call. I love your show to death. The show is fantastic. I love all the hosts. You guys are fantastic in what you do. It's
glad
amazing
to have
information
you
guys are putting out.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Yeah, I love your show. And but anyway, the other night, I was listening to, it was actually George Norrie hosting, and he had I believe it was him, and he had a guest on there speaking about the Anunnaki.
Okay.
And I never knew about this, but I think I heard of him before, but he had said that their main thing was they were aliens, and they were mining gold on Mars, and then they actually had to come to Earth because Mars became inhospitable to their race. And I was wondering, because I'm seeing all these commercials now about how these companies want to buy your gold. Send your gold in, and we'll pay you cash for it. I was wondering, is there any connection? I mean, that was kind of bizarre. But is there any connection with all this gold being bought out or being, you know, all these companies all of a sudden popping up all over the U.S. wanting to buy your gold up?
Yeah, you know, I don't know. I never thought about it. I think, it's part of this whole discussion about the Anunnaki goes back to Zachariah Sitchin. And so I'm not sure exactly the guest that George had on, but I'd have to think about that. I do know that there's almost a direct correlation to the guest we've got coming up, because this idea about buying up gold and controlling the gold supply, that's definitely an issue that the government that's just historical fact, is that the government has controlled the gold for a long time. So maybe part of why people are so anxious to both buy, own gold and sell the gold that they have is because they want to be able to take control for that on their own while they still can. But fair point on the other. I don't know. That may be a future guest issue too, coming up on Coast to Coast. Well, I think that's it for what's. I think we can get in before the bottom of this hour, but I do want to make one other mention if I can, because the folks in Phoenix have been so nice when I was there. And I wanted to say a shout out to everybody at the Cronkite School of Journalism and Mass Communications, because they have accepted me into the PhD program, which is kind of cool. So that will be something that all things being equal at this point, I will be doing, I believe, later on this year. And it's pretty cool. So there's something to be said for the way that higher education works, and that I do believe there's a lot of folks out there that don't need higher education to be very successful. And I think there's many people that we know on this program that are autodidacts who have been able to put together amazing pieces of work, like Howard Bloom, who is on frequently on Coast to Coast and never darken the door of a university except as a lecturer or as a teacher. I just happen to not be that guy. And there's so many things that I really do want to research, and I'm anxious to do that. And that is something I will be looking forward to coming up later on this year. So anyway, just thought I'd fill you in on that. I'd been tweeting that out a little bit about that program, and I hadn't mentioned yet which school it was. So Arizona State University, Cronkite School of Journalism and Mass Communication, sometime later on this year. I'm looking forward to some Phoenix weather. That's for sure. Cold. up in the upper Midwest, and there's a massive snowstorm in the middle of the country right now, a snowstorm which is going to make traveling hazardous for many people. Be careful on the roads if you're driving, and just keep on listening. Pull over before you call. We'll give you the numbers for open lines coming up next on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. By the way, too, if you speaking of grooves, you got to go take a look at George Norrie's new TV show. There's a lot more information up on it. Have you sampled it yet? Good week to do that. Just click onto that. There's details waiting for you at coasttocoastam.com, along with all the Coast to Coast AM swag, which if you haven't bought that to share coming up, remember, we aren't that far away from Mother's Day. Never too early to have something to order for mom and have her waiting there underneath the Mother's Day tree, or perhaps, you know, in an Easter basket somewhere, along with some marshmallow peeps. All right, peeps, we'll get to you coming up next, because I know you're all hanging on. Open lines for the rest of this half hour, and then it's disaster government, national emergencies, continuity of government, and you, Brian Toohey, next hour on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. Jumping into it, Glenn is in Harlington, Texas. Open lines on Coast to Coast. Glenn?
Good morning, Ian.
Morning.
Congratulations on your acceptance.
Oh, thank you.
And cool. How's the hearing?
That's terrible. That's just terrible. Let's go. Let's stay on the happy subjects.
Okay, all right.
Thank you.
Well, I was wondering how the government may react to the possibility, and I haven't heard a lot of people speak of it yet, that the comets the Russians discovered plunging to within 800,000 miles of the surface of the sun, being broken up, and the debris thrown out into the plane of the ecliptic, in other words, the planetary plane, and a possible planetary bombardment from the debris, as well as the comet that the Australians discovered, which a year later will possibly impact Mars, throwing up a plume of debris, which will be a gravitational shot at Earth, because in 2017 and 18, Mars won't be on the other side of the sun. It's an opposition year, and we'll be side by side, whizzing around one side of the sun. What do you think is the possibility of government collusion and disinformation about such a thing?
Well, I mean, there's that popular belief that governments will always try to withhold from the population anything that they can't do anything about, or take credit for anything that can be done, even if they didn't do it. But the other side of that is that if there's a government out there that knows which side of the Earth will be spinning when we're hitting, as you know, we talk about planetary bombardment or orbital debris or whatever, I don't know that any government can ever accurately predict that. So, right? I mean, maybe you're some sort of mathematical genius and you could always know for sure it's not going to hit your country. But if a government knows that there's going to be some massive planetary bombardment coming up, how would it be in their best interest to try to keep that quiet?
Well, stranger things have happened.
No, true. But I'm asking a legit question. I'm just like, I'm trying to figure out their moat. If they can't control the outcome.
In other words, nothing to see here. Move along. All the bunker space is ours.
Well, here's the other way I'm looking at it. And this is the reason why I posed the question the way I did. In the book Disaster Government, we'll be talking more about this coming up in just a few minutes, Brian Toohey makes the point that a government would be more inclined to pass along information like that, even if it were false, because that's what it would give it ultimately the power. Is to be able to use to say, look, all this planetary bombardment's coming, you know, look at all the debris that's going to be, you better give us these powers, or, you know, and then they use that type of information. And our government has done that so much more than I think we have, than most of us can remember. And it's really interesting to see the big long list of things that governments have used just like that. Something that they didn't have anything to do with, but when they saw it as an opportunity to torque the people, they would use it in executive action, or they would write a law that would allow them extra powers to stop something which they can't possibly stop. Like, as you suggest, planetary bombardment of some sort, which, you know, a government can't exactly do that. But that won't stop them from trying to find a way to work it to their advantage. And we'll get to more of that coming up next hour. Steve is in northern New Jersey on Coast to Coast. And the time we have open line. Steve, go ahead.
Hi, Ian. Great show tonight.
Thank you. I think you're going to enjoy it.
Yeah, I work in R&D, research and development in the telephone and wireless industry. And the caller that you had before stated the fact that the good old twisted wire phone line has some great reliability to it. The central offices have a basement full of batteries, and they have backup generators. And, of course, they'll work if we lose power until they run out of fuel for the generators. But that will take a few days to a week, perhaps. Now, the wireless systems also have battery backup and backup generators. And the larger service providers tend to have better defined systems and, you know, more batteries and more generators and so forth. And the fiber optic systems and the cable systems have the problem of they need power to operate. And when the battery, you know, dies and you're facing the modem they put in your house, that just stops working. However, many people who have the twisted wire systems have cordless phones. And they, too, are dependent upon batteries. So if you have a wired system, you need one of those old-fashioned phones on the wall for reliability.
Well, but don't forget, I also have a car charger. So for my cell phone, I can always just pop that in the car and drive around the block a couple of times.
Sure, sure. I'm not worried about your cell phone because everybody, you know, will do that. They'll go to the car, they'll charge their phones. It's the base stations, all those.
Oh,
cars.
Okay. Now, you mean by that, yeah, I get it then. I'm sorry. Right. You're talking about for the wireless within the house, a proprietary system inside the home.
No. If you have a cell phone, you communicate to a base station, which is sitting under a tower. And that base station has batteries in it, and it has, for the larger service providers, they have backup generators there.
Right.
And they will keep that cell system running for a few days or so. But so, you know, we just had Sandy up here, and we had our cell phones worked fine for the service was a little spotty, but they worked fine for that entire time.
Interesting. And I would imagine, too, that even though the cell phones were working and the homes that were flooded, the regular phone service wasn't working, right?
No, the regular phone service worked. The twin wire old-fashioned.
Even in a flooded home?
Sure.
Oh, how about that?
Because, you know, it's typically about 48 volts, and those wires are typically run far above, you know, my sister has a house on the shore, and her house got flooded, and her phone on the wall still worked after the house was flooded.
I would not have guessed that. That's so interesting. I appreciate it.
High enough for it to short out easily.
Interesting. Well, good. Good to know. Thank you. Appreciate that. Good to have an expert thought. Tom is in Santa Rosa, California, on Coast to Coast for Open Lines. Tom?
Well, thank you for taking my call, and it's good to talk to you again. A couple of things went through my head, but I wanted to mention one of our friends a couple of years ago had that flesh-eating bacteria. She's one of the few people to survive, and she has to go back now with to take off more of her foot so they can fit her for a prosthesis.
Oh, gosh. And well, I'm glad she survived.
Yeah, she's one of the few, but it was in, I'm looking at this. I posted it on the Coast to Coast Google Plus page as a comment. The Project Censored came out with a story in 2012 about the superbug spreading around the world, and I added a lot of other stuff there on the Google Plus page.
Can I ask how she got it?
We're not really certain. What I have heard is some people that colloidal silver is pretty much compatible with most any antibiotic, and some people have been combining the two. How well that's turning out, I really don't have the expertise to say. You might remember me as the Toxic Reverend.
Oh, I do remember, actually, the nickname anyway. I can't remember what we were talking about, but...
Well, no, you interviewed me a few years ago.
About colloidal silver?
No, about toxic chemicals.
Okay, good. All right,
I wanted to say, too, with the colloidal silver, there's other factors. Three of the world's top brain surgeons came out a few years ago in a New York Times article about cell phones being associated with brain tumors.
Yeah.
And they said, yeah, okay, I wanted to make sure you were aware of that. I heard what you were saying, and... God bless you. I'm looking forward to
Thank
your
you.
Show.
There's a lot of people talking about that. Thank you. Appreciate that, Tom. A lot of people say that there's a connection between cell phones and tinnitus, too, but I haven't heard that other than just a suggestion. First-time caller line, Chuck is in Indiana on Coast to Coast. Chuck?
Good morning.
Hey.
Yeah, I just had a reply to the caller about the phone lines earlier. Your second caller, the phone expert that worked there, he was absolutely right. Just a little additional information. People that do still have fiber in their houses, one thing that I found is prevalent, because I have the same thing, is the battery backups do tend to go bad within about 5 years. So all that they can do is increase their battery backup to a larger one that the phone company doesn't have, and that will increase your time. Just increase the amount of your battery storage.
Oh, cool. Well, good. I hadn't realized it was such a problem, and I hadn't realized that there'd be so many experts on the solution. So glad we can offer both tonight. Thank you for jumping in. Wildcard line, Dave in Cliffside Park, New Jersey, while we still have time for open lines on Coast to Coast.
It's always good to hear your voice, my man.
You too, Dave. Thank you so much.
I'm calling about two things. That AKA asteroid that went into Russia.
Mm-hmm.
I was listening to a podcast from another radio program. I won't mention the name, but they said that if this thing would have hit the ground, it would have been the equivalent of 5 Hiroshimas.
Now, I heard that.
Imagine,
yeah.
Can you imagine the devastation? I mean, oh my God.
I'm surprised it's only 5.
Well, they were talking about, they said that after this thing had landed, there was debris, and there was people collecting the debris. And guess what? Our good old Men in Black showed up, asking people if they had debris or, you know, what they saw. And so it's pretty weird, you know? I mean, and what is NASA saying? Oh, hey, there's an asteroid. It's 10 miles away. Don't we get, like, a couple months' notice for this stuff?
Well, you know what? I'd be curious about that. I think what actually indicates is how flat-footed a lot of that sighting system is. That they really don't know. I mean, hopefully they'll know more than another Tunguska, right, where it's going to blow up 8 feet over our head. But
yeah,
I don't.
You know, but that big one that just missed us, we had a couple months notice, yeah. You know, it was all in the news. It was all like, it's not going to hit us. And,
right.
And this one, hey, it's 10 miles above. Watch out, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
It's kind of scary.
It's like when you drive past the airport and it says, caution, low-flying planes, like you can do anything about it. You know, like there's absolutely... Go ahead.
Also, we celebrated an anniversary on February 2nd, the attack on Los Angeles.
Oh, that's right. I was just actually writing about that the other day to somebody. I forgot it was on February 2nd.
This is amazing. I mean, they fired so much artillery at this thing, didn't bring it down. It went up and down the West Coast, and... out of this thing were little clouds and little boomerang crafts coming down. They got a couple of those down, and it went to a secret base, Area 51, immediately. And it's just very fascinating stuff. I went on the web, and I saw some footage from there. It was pretty cool.
Yeah, this is some people know it as the Battle of Los Angeles, and it's a pretty cool story. If you don't, Google that tonight while you have time. Thank you. Let me try and get in last two callers who've been hanging on. Richard in New York, open lines on Coast to Coast. Richard?
Yeah, hey, and really good to hear your voice.
And you,
by
thank
the way,
you.
This isn't why I called, but while I was listening to all the other callers, just for the record, I live on Long Island. I lost electricity during Sandy and my hardwired copper old-fashioned phone for 2 weeks.
Well, you weren't supposed to. So
I've lived here since 1949. I've been through hurricanes a lot worse than Sandy. And it never happened before. This was the first. But
interesting.
When they take down all the phone poles, then
that's true. That's true.
Everything goes.
Nothing to tie the system together.
What was I going to say? Oh, yeah. There was a program on one of the major networks. Can I say ABC?
Yeah, okay.
Okay. It was called Zero Hour.
Yeah, I heard about that.
Now, this is very strange.
So the Anthony Edwards TV show, right?
Right. It was very popular, had a large following. A lot of people liked it. They discussed a lot of the things that you guys go over with Coast to Coast here.
Right.
And normally when a new series starts, they give it a trial run, it's called, in the business of like 7 to 10 episodes. This thing went 3 episodes, and they pulled it. Do you know anything about that, why that happened?
You know, actually, it's more... 3 episodes and out is not all that uncommon. I mean, it must have done so badly that they feel like they could do better off with reruns. I'm disappointed to hear that, because actually I was thinking it was kind of one of those shows I made a note of to go back and get caught up on Hulu or Netflix or something later on. And so you'd watched it and it was good?
Oh, it was excellent. And there were a lot of other people that liked it. I mean, it was about as much of a flop as The X-Files was a flop. You know what I'm saying? It talked about all these. It was the Nazis involved and the Rosicrucians. It had, like, all the stuff, you know, you go over in conspiracy junk, you know, on all these radio shows. And it was fascinating, and they were weaving such a great – plus they had the Antichrist in there. It was like, wild. And all of a sudden, just as it was getting really interesting, it wasn't like – the first show was okay, and the second one was so-so, and the third one was a real bomb. It wasn't like that. It kept on getting better and better, building, and all of a sudden, it just wasn't on anymore. And then I heard on the program that's on before you guys, on my local thing, Clive, whatever his name is called, Ground Zero, I think it's called, they said they pulled Zero Hour, and he said he's trying to figure it out, too. He said he doesn't understand it because everybody liked it. And I just figured, like, maybe you guys had heard chatter about it. And,
yeah, I just pulled up the story, and I'm looking at it. Right now, the lowest rated. They said the lowest rated for ABC for a scripted show during the regular TV season ever.
And Roswell was a weather balloon.
I don't know. I mean, Fringe is. Wait. No, I think Fringe is on. I think there's a million shows like this. I don't think. I don't know. I'm sorry to hear that if they pulled it, but all right, let me squeeze in Karen from Amarillo in the time that we have before the top of the hour, because then we'll get to disaster government, and I'll read a little bit more here. Oh, wait, we lost Karen? Okay, we have Dave in Lake Tahoe, and then we'll close it out. Dave?
Looking forward to your new book coming out. I'll make sure I get that when it's available.
Thank you.
And as far as this national emergency thing you got coming up, it was first brought to my attention by a U.S. Marine named Peter Santelli. Do you know Peter?
No, not off the top of my head. Nope.
Yeah, he's got a website, petersantelli.com. You might want to check that out. He talks all about that the president's overstepping his bounds with all these executive orders.
Congress. What Peter's got to know is the long history of that. We'll get into that coming up. I'm not saying he's wrong. But he's crazy if he thinks it's just starting with Barack Obama. And that's the really eye-opening piece already in disaster government, national emergencies, continuity of government, and you. We'll get to that coming up next hour. Yeah, just to wrap up on Zero Hour, Anthony Edwards, it was the lowest rated premiere for ABC for a scripted show in the regular TV season ever. That'll get you canceled. I'm sorry to hear that, because it actually looked good and sounded good, and I like him so much, but what can you do? All right, so here we'll get back to Brian Toohey coming up in just a second, and I got to give a shout-out to some folks who are following me on Twitter tonight, too, so thank you. Love to keep in touch with you, at Deacon Punnett, the Twitter handle. We'll do that during our monthly visits here on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett.